Our director of the Older Americans Volunteer Programs is a woman, Helen Kelly. Our director of the Office of Policy and Planning, Irene Tinker, is a woman. And our director of Administration and Finance, Mary Leyland, is a woman. All of these are very non-traditional appointments for women, with the exception of the Older Americans program, where you might have predicted that there would be a woman. But we have forged ahead, and roughly 66% of our executive senior staff of the agency is female, and we're very proud of that. We've got a hefty proportion of minorities, too, but I think that's maybe another speech. The longer that I am at ACTION, the more convinced I am that the issues of concern to women around the world are very much the same. We are lucky because we have the ability to work both domestically and internationally on those issues. And that's a remarkable opportunity for a federal agency. But at root is the devaluation of women and women's work, the perception that women and women's work is somehow less important than that of men. I was reminded of this recently at Nairobi, the United Nations Conference on Desertification. Women were mentioned in one speech of all the 112 plenary speeches made by the 112 nations that participated. Now, it's important because the casual observer looking at the patterns of use in marginal lands would see immediately that women were absolutely pivotal to turning around the encroaching desert. The men may be in charge of marketing the livestock at a certain point on a seasonal basis and may have an important role in handling the animals. But by and large, all of the other areas in which there is some leverage available for control of the encroaching desert are in the hands of women. The collection of firewood, the stripping down of trees, the burning, the way that firewood is used, the production of charcoal for fuel, the drawing and carrying of water, the utilization of water, all of the areas that are most crucial are handled by women. So for only one country, India, to say to the world, in effect, special attention must be given to women if we are to lick the problems of the desert, was a very, very harsh reminder to me of this devaluation of women and women's work all over the world. Fortunately, I was able to delete and change all of the references to men and man in the U.S. plenary speech. So you will find that it's sprinkled through with human beings, human people, persons, men and women. But I was too late in getting to the speech. I saw it 2 minutes before it was delivered. I got to change all of the male gender references. We're planning to do the same thing at home as well. We have volunteers working with battered spouse centers and family violence centers across the country. We have the ability in our domestic programs to pick up and seize, to sense problems long before they work their way through the usual routes, the usual channels of government response. Because our volunteers work at the grassroots and through sponsoring agencies deep in communities, they can often pick up what's happening long before say a Secretary of Labor would understand the problem. And I think that Ray Marshall wouldn't mind if I said that, or Joe Califano, or even Pat Harris. We figure that we're perhaps about 3 years ahead of the normal rooting to a policy level in our ability to sense problems before they really erupt. But even with all of our closeness to communities and the fact that so many of our volunteers are women, we still have our own problems internally with our staff. In one Latin American country, Peace Corps volunteers and programmers turned in a report which said something to the effect of, middle-class women are very much integrated in this country into the professions and indeed are holding jobs such as governor or minister. However, lower-class women assume the traditional women's roles of wife and mother. The problem was that the area manager for that part of the world for the Peace Corps had just returned from that country, where she had seen that women were in total control of the markets It was women who were selling the produce. They were out there alongside the road selling fruit, cashew nuts, and so on. And she was appalled because the Peace Corps programmers and the country director, the Peace Corps staff, had completely dismissed this as important economic work. It, in fact, was crucial to those families. The women were the backbone of that subsistence economy where people were concerned. Their produce was not counted. The income, the revenue from their produce was not counted in the GMP, true. But as far as the livelihood and the subsistence of the people of that country, the economic role played by women was absolutely central and at the core. And our own staff failed to pick it up. And our staff, I would defend as being much more keenly sensitive to these issues than is true in most bureaucracies. So we have a good deal of work to do inside. I think that the participation of Peace Corps volunteers as role models is another important area. We have women now working in a number of non-traditional areas. Sometimes the host country officials say, just a minute, we don't want women working in fisheries. And we don't really pay any attention to that. If a host country minister says, I only want men to work in sheep farming, we reject that bid. We will not respond to a male-only requirement if it is not functionally related. Now, there are exceptions. For example, in Mauritania and other countries, men cannot work in a situation of intimacy with women. And so if you're going to put together a health program working with the village midwives at the village level, it is legitimate to say that women only may be volunteers. But unless it's functionally related to the work that is being done and to the culture, in that sense, we reject any such gender requirements. And they're often made, and they can often be turned around simply by discussion. Well, I think that you'll see that I stay busy at ACTION, but at the same time, I've been trying to spend as much time as possible continuing to work with women. I speak to as many women's groups as possible and work with other women in the administration, women on the Hill. Just recently, two of the task forces from the Committee of 51.3% produced reports on discrimination in the insurance industry and in the implementation of the Equal Credit Opportunity Act, and those have all now been distributed to the key women appointees in the administration, and we hope to begin pushing a little from inside. Up until this point, I think that there has been no issue that has unified the women in the administration. I don't know that either of those two issues, insurance or credit, are the ones to do it. But I'm certainly searching for a way in which women, both in the executive office and in the legislative branch, can begin to work together around a crucial issue and by pulling together have a very positive influence on what is done. I think some of you may have questions, and I'll end right here. Carrie.
Mary, if a woman agrees, okay, you are obviously evident that it is not absolutely necessary for a woman in business, but how important would you rate a woman in business on her own?
Well, I can give you a purely personal answer to that, which is that a law degree is a wonderful staging degree. I mean, look at all of the men who are politicians and who are corporate executives. Being a lawyer for men has long been the best, almost generalist stepping stone. In fact, I consider it to be a generalist degree, a non-specialty. I think it's a real advantage to women. Well, the problems of alcoholism in women are a whole separate convention. I mean, we ought to convene another meeting in Dallas on that alone. I don't know that they're any worse among businesswomen than they are among other women. There's certainly a number of things that can be done. Women have been left out of the normal treatment programs. of alcoholism, partly because the definition of the problem didn't include them. Between the period, if I can recall the facts, between the period of 1922 to 1971, throughout the entire world of studies on alcoholism published in English, there were only about 20 studies that addressed women at all, and they all talked about women as spouses of alcoholics. Now, it's been a while since I did that research, but there really is almost nothing in the literature right now about the treatment of women as women, women as sufferers of alcoholism. So that all of our treatment has been skewed, and I find it hard to separate out women in business from women in general.
The 45-year-old woman who kicked her out of school and, you know, she busted her head.
Perhaps somebody else, more to the topic here.
Yes.
You were talking about your organization for business women owners and your old girl network. We have started an organization in Dallas, and I would like to hear more on your format for that, and is it still in existence, and if so, how can we contact you?
Yes. Well, I'm no longer associated with it. I dissolved my corporation, and I had been president of the association, and I gave that up. But I can tell you how to reach them. You should write Donna O'Bannon, it's O'Bannon, at 2000 P, as in Peter Street, Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20036. It's very much alive. Yes?
What happened to the 51.3% committee? There was a talent bank, and we were told supposed to send their resumes into it, and we did, and never heard another word from anybody.
Yes, they were utilized during the transition. What I was doing in my meetings with the cabinet officers was a separate effort where I went directly to them. The talent bank in the transition worked through the transition operation. It worked through the office of the presidency, or it wasn't the presidency yet, but it worked through the inchoate presidency, the about-to-be presidency, and I decided that that wasn't enough. So I, in addition, went separately to lobby the cabinet officers for fear that some of that was getting lost. But the talent bank was utilized in putting together lists that were prepared for the cabinet officers by the transition operations people. And I know that there were problems with that. I, by then, was no longer associated with, and I've heard from many, many women that they never heard anything back.
Right.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Well,
I don't think that it's anywhere now. I think that the Democratic National Committee has the capability to continue that, and that Greta DeWald may in fact be doing something along those lines. The big problem now is that the opportunities are severely limited. We are just absolutely strapped by the civil service system, which when it was designed and put into effect was meant to be protection for workers who were fired every time a new politician came into office. So that 40 years ago, Joe Califano would have just dismissed everybody in the agency, completely fired them. And that meant that patronage really ruled the roost as far as federal employment was concerned. So the basic motivation for setting up the system was a good one. That is, competence should be retained, and people working in the federal government should not simply be pals. But what has happened now is that we are strapped with a system that is unwieldy and most inflexible. Reform of the Civil Service Commission will be central to the administration's efforts in government reorganization next year. The president is very concerned, the people working on reorganization. It's a very ticklish issue, though. And one of the things I think you ought to know is that the new commissioner, Alan Campbell, is very concerned about the veterans' benefits, which have been very prejudicial in favor of men for a long time, because you got an extra 10 points on your rating, which pushed you right ahead to the top of the list in the competitive process, and it left women totally at the end. Well, Campbell has tackled that immediately, and it's one of the the biggest servings on his plate right now. I don't see any relief ahead very quickly. I think the only thing that you can do is to go to individual agencies, but I don't want to be too ecstatic about the opportunities. I mean, we have almost no latitude in our agency, and I know that the situation is worse than many others. In addition, I don't want to get too technical, but in addition, in the last administration, thousands and thousands of civil service positions were converted. I'm sorry, I stated that wrong. Thousands and thousands of political appointments were converted to the civil service. The plum book for our agency in 1973 had 8 pages. This past year, in 1976, it had 2, which means that 6 pages of political appointees in our agency, and it's a small agency, had been absorbed into the civil service system. So to now get those jobs reclassified to political appointments where you can legitimately say the tone needs to be different now and so we should bring in new people, it's going to be a very rough job.
And you have the attrition as well,
too. There are a lot of problems like that. Gary, there's somebody back here. Yes, Jacqueline.
I think it's exciting that Lakeville is returning to Pennsylvania. And is that a footnote for the president now?
Yes.
This year?
Yes, it is. Yes. Yes, it is. John Lewis, who is our director of domestic operations, had visited President Nyerere in Tanzania, and when he was here this year, he met with him again and Sam Brown, and Nyerere told both of them that the Vietnam War had been so difficult for the Tanzanian people to accept that no matter how good the work of the Peace Corps volunteers, the time had come when they couldn't have Americans living and working in their villages, when Americans were also strafing villages in Vietnam. So that's why Peace Corps had to leave Tanzania, and we're delighted that we've been invited back in. I can tell you a little bit about it. I testified recently on the Hill in support of it. There seem to be 2 primary considerations. One is that there is worry in the executive office that there should not be more legislation, that there ought to be ways found of addressing this problem within existing structures and existing legislation. The other concern is that there are those who want it to be an HEW, there are those who don't want it to be an HEW, there are those who want it to be in action, there are those who want it to be in labor, there are those who want it to... So there's a sort of internal dispute about where, if it is passed, it ought to be administered. And that coupled with the problems that OMB has with another piece of legislation, certainly aren't going to speed it through. No, they just don't want a proliferation of legislation for social programs. They feel that there's enough flexibility within existing systems to address that problem.
I'm afraid our time is about up. We can take the question.
You mentioned 4 new countries that people are going to go into. Well, what are the other 2?
No. You know, I'm not sure that I'm any better qualified to answer that question than anybody else. I can give you a personal opinion. Well, as the cabinet works now, you have Ray Marshall and Califano and Pat Harris and Juanita Kreps. They're all on an equal basis in the way that they relate to each other. They relate individually to the president. There is no way of resolving conflict at the cabinet level, except through the president. That means that if you have conflicting priorities, or labor wants to do something big in youth unemployment, and HUD thinks that they are better suited to do it, there is no other resolution for that other than the president saying this is what you should do. So I think that having a cabinet level office for women would create some serious problems. For one thing, it would take all of the other cabinet agencies off the hook. so that you would no longer be able to go to Joe Califano and say, well, where is this family planning program that you've been talking about? Because he could easily say, well, I think we're going to leave the medical model aside and we're going to make it a broadly based social services system and we're going to put it in the Bureau of Women. And there's much more opportunity for that kind of politicking in which the concerns of women could be lost, I feel, by setting up that agency than there is by continuing to create the capability among women to pressure the existing organizations and to force responsiveness. I would not be in favor of it just from having lived and worked in Washington for 10 years and seen the way that things are purposely dropped through the cracks to be lost. Crucial, absolutely crucial. And I think that the abortion issue is a very good example. I mean, effectively, the executive branch and the judicial branch have been closed off. And I feel that the private, non-governmental sector is absolutely crucial. Not just in that issue. I mean, that's a highly controversial issue, but in many, many other issues, the private organizations actually have more experience and more knowledge. Strengthening the family, for example, some of the Jewish welfare organizations and a variety of private voluntary organizations really have much more legitimate expertise than the federal government does. And I think that the problem is one of finding ways for those private organizations to be involved in the setting of policy and to be used in communicating that policy. But I think they're vital.
Thank you very much.